Hi, good morning, everybody, or afternoon or evening, depending on where in the world you currently are. My name is Karen. I am a compulsive overeater. I'm here in Los Angeles, Eagle Rock to be exact. But when I say Eagle Rock, most people don't know what I'm talking about. But it's part of Los Angeles. I don't know how many of you who are here are brand new, partially new, never been to a meeting before, been to a lot of meetings before. I am going to pitch my share, if I may use that term, assuming that you are exceedingly new and know very little about the Fellowship of Overeaters Anonymous, the program. And I hope I won't use terms or say things that will confuse you, because I remember coming to my first OA meeting, I was confused enough. I will say that just to give you a little bit of background, I came into Overeaters Anonymous in January of 1986, which means that I've been here for just over 37 years. I like to tell people I started when I was 10 years old, but nobody believes me when I say that, and they're right. That's not true. But so I've been here for a long time, certainly more than half my life. And I'm going to jump back at the beginning a little bit and tell you that I came to Overeaters Anonymous not to lose weight. I came to OA because I could not stop eating. I just couldn't stop. So let's back up a little bit. Actually, just to show you a little bit about myself, and I'm sorry for those people who are listening to this later. You can't see my pictures, but I'm going to show you a little bit of what I used to look like. So that picture of me on the left, it's my left. I don't know if it's your left or right. Is I was probably maybe 2 years old. I'm not sure. And I just think it's the cutest little picture. So I put it up there. And I have to tell you, I looked at that picture for years before I realized that I have a Twinkie in my left hand. Had no idea. So there's that. The picture to the right of it, I think, is like a 10th grade school picture. And you can see chipmunk cheeks and no life in my eyes. That's what I noticed most of all about about this picture. And not much of a smile either. Going down, you can see, I'll talk about the right side picture first. That's probably the following year, my next year in high school. You can see a feeble attempt at a smile, still no teeth, no big smile, and not really, again, much light in my eyes. The picture on the left is my siblings and me. I'm the one with my hands on my hips, or it looks like I'm probably pulling up my shorts. Look like a pretty normal weight there. I had to have been about somewhere between 7 or 8 years old, because we moved out of that house when I was 8 years old, and that's my sister and my two brothers. One of them is gone now, the little baby up on top of my sister's shoulders. But anyway, that's that. Looked pretty normal, I guess. Wasn't normal, but I looked pretty normal. And then I'm gonna put up. Oh, hang on, I've got to do it this way. I'm gonna put up another set of photos. Whoops, not there. Do it this way. Thank you for your patience as I master technology. Okay, so the picture of me there on the left is in 19. What is it? It has 1997. Personally, I think I look pretty darn good there. Can't tell you my weight. I wasn't one who followed my weight so much, but I think I look pretty decent. The picture on the right, on the other hand, I relapsed. I had been abstaining from compulsive overeating, and I'll talk about what that means. The picture on the right is 9 years into my 10-year relapse. I will tell you, I never left OA. Never, 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 never. I just couldn't stop eating. Which is, my thing. And I think that's all my pictures. So let me jump back a little bit. And also, well, let me jump back a little bit to the beginning. So you saw I had three siblings, and I got tall early in my family. So I was able to take the goodies, the sweet stuff, whatever it was, and hide them in the pantry on the top shelf behind the cat food or behind whatever, because in my house, when some goodie or some sweet or some something came back from the grocery store, it all disappeared in a hurry. We were all people who ate stuff and ate stuff a lot and quickly. So I would hide the cakes, the candy, the cookie, all that kind of stuff, so that when I needed a sugar fix, I had one. I had it. I had something there, because when I needed it, I needed it. When we moved, when I was 8 or 9, I had my own bedroom, and it was a lot easier to hide stuff in my own bedroom. So I did that a lot, and I ate a lot. I'm in recovery now, but I am a huge, it sounds like somebody's not muted. I'm hearing noise in the background. So if you're not muted, thank you very much. Just a little bit of noise, but I'm so easily distracted. Anyway, I can remember when I was in junior high school or middle school or whatever you call it, wherever you're from, which meant I would have been, I can't even remember the ages, but still pretty young, just entering my teens, I guess. At 10 o'clock in the morning, they had something they called nutrition, which was a little break between classes. And in nutrition, in the school cafeteria, they sold cinnamon rolls, cinnamon cake. The student store was open with candy, all this kind of stuff. I don't know how nutritious it was, but that, I guess, I don't know why they had that, why they called it that, but I would go to the cafeteria and I'd buy two of these coffee cakes, which were about that size. They were pretty big, especially when you're a little kid. I'd buy two. I'd go behind the student store or somewhere where nobody could see me. I'd eat them. I'd go back in and buy some more and keep doing that. I guess I didn't realize at the time, but I was just so uncomfortable in my own skin that I just ate a lot because that seemed to take the edge off my discomfort. When I was in high school and I could drive, between my high school and my house, there was a 7-Eleven, which is like a little convenience store, and they had the candy aisle right in front of the cash register. So anybody working at the cash register could see the candy aisle. Didn't bother me. I could outwit them. I used to go there and walk up and down the candy aisle and steal stuff. Sometimes I'd steal, sometimes I'd buy, sometimes I'd buy and steal, but I'd come home with a bag of candy. I'd go into my room, shut the door, put the candy on the left side of me, lay down in my bed, read and eat. That's what I did all through high school and then some. Then I went off to university, and then it really even got bigger. So, I can remember also that in my family, I think everybody hid food. I remember one time I was looking around for something, and I found my mother's cookies in the dryer. So, you know, the clothes dryer. So that's just what we did. When I was young, I learned that I didn't stand a chance in hell of losing weight. I just couldn't do it. Everybody in my family was, almost everybody was overweight. I had a 400-pound uncle. Sorry, I can't change that to stones or kilos. My math isn't that fast. My grandfather was 300 pounds. My parents were overweight. My sister, we were all overweight. I remember when the families would get together for holidays, the women would be in the kitchen cooking, talking about losing weight and eating while cooking. The men would be off, I don't know where, and I would be running around with my cousins. And everybody was talking about dieting all the time. I tried a commercial weight loss program. I tried it twice. Once I really tried it. Another time I just followed along with my aunt when she was doing it. Didn't work. I think once I lost 3.5 pounds. Mind you, I was in seventh grade. I was probably 12 or 13 years old. And one time I got weighed, and I lost 3.25 pounds, and everybody was cheering, and everybody was so happy. And that never happened again. Because for me, it wasn't about my weight. I tried a few other things, diet pills, and a thing called a pre-digested liquid protein. If any of you remember that, it was just disgusting. But nothing worked. So, what else? So in January of 1986. Oh, and I also want to tell you that I was a huge quantity eater. I can remember watching, I'm a big sports nut, and I love football. And for those of you somewhere else, it's American football. I saw that timer note. I actually have my my phone going too with the timer, so thank you for the reminder. And anyway, football. I would, back in the old days, there were doubleheader football games. You know, one in the morning, and then a little break, and then the next one. And I remember I would be watching the game, and it was the third quarter or the fourth quarter, and then suddenly it was halftime. I ate so much that I passed out. I said I fell asleep. That's what I used to tell myself because I worked so hard and I was so tired, but I ate myself into a food coma. The quantities were huge. I remember unbuttoning my pants, then having to unzip my pants because I was having trouble breathing, and my trousers, for those of you who call them trousers. I used to live in Australia, and I lived in England for a year, so I'm a little bit familiar with other terms, but I think you know what I mean. I would put on a pair of sweatpants because the pants were too tight. I'd put on a pair of shorts, big baggy shorts, whatever, because I couldn't breathe. I ate so much that I could not breathe. But I couldn't stop eating. So in January of 86, it was one of those days where I'd go from the sofa to the fridge, sofa to the fridge, sofa to the fridge. In fact, there was a well-worn path from my sofa to the kitchen in the carpet. You could see how many times I'd been walking there, and I lived alone. And I kept going and opening the fridge, thinking there would be something else in there that could fix me. Well, that never happened. Nothing changed from the 5 minutes before. Anyway, I had heard about Overeaters Anonymous when I was in graduate school at university. And I remember this last particular day, I was in the kitchen. There was about this much left in the package of crackers I was eating. For those of you who are listening on camera, there were probably 8 crackers left. And I had been eating I ate the entire box, and I would get out a paper plate because God forbid I should do dishes. I'd lay crackers out, put strawberry jam on them, put another cracker on each, more strawberry jam, and make little cracker mountains and get orange juice. Don't ask me why. Go back to the sofa and eat those. And I kept going back and forth and back and forth. And when I walked into the kitchen that day, January 86, and there was just that little bit of crackers left, I remember thinking, I'm full. I can't breathe. I have no room to eat them. I have to eat them. I must eat them. And it was at that moment that I realized I could not stop eating. And that is the first half of step one. We admitted we were powerless over food. And it took me a little while to get the second half of step one, which is admitted our lives had become unmanageable. That took a little bit longer. So I came to OA. My very first meeting made sense to me. I was I was a lot confused, but I felt like I belonged. People were saying things about how they ate and what they did in their lives that I had done, and I didn't know anybody else did. I didn't know anybody else dug stuff out of the trash can and ate it. I didn't know anybody else would see a piece of candy on the floor, pick it up, dust it off, and eat it. I didn't know other people snuck food the way I did. I didn't know other people stole food and ate it like crazy. I didn't know any of that. I didn't know there was anybody else who did what I did. And so my first connection with the fellowship was I felt like there were other people like me. And that identification was amazing. That identification was incredible. I will say, one of the lines I like to use is, see, you guys get me. And I get you because we have the same disease of compulsive overeating. It took me a little while to understand that compulsive overeating is a disease, and it is. But what I say is, you guys are enough like me to know that, like, I can tell you the punchline to the joke without telling you the joke, and you get it because we are the same. So I would, the most important thing that I will say for this entire time is to keep coming back, no matter what, no matter what. If you're gaining weight, if you're losing weight, if you're binging, if you're not binging, if you're starving or vomiting, whatever it is, be here. Because here is where you will find somebody or somebodies who are just like you and who can help you and commiserate with you and shine a light on the path for you. You do not have to suffer alone anymore. Thank you, God. You may have doubts. I did. There is a lot of ambiguity at the beginning. And I always said, I have a low tolerance for ambiguity, but I didn't care. I just kept showing up. I made a couple of notes and I'm kind of watching the clock. So I'm just going to go through these little bit of notes and then explain them a little bit better. All right. So you'll have doubts, live with ambiguity. As it was said in one of our readings early on or in the script, this is a spiritual program. It is not a religious program. Doesn't matter whether you are religious, not religious. Doesn't matter if you are atheist or agnostic. If you believe in God or don't believe in God or question, it doesn't matter. The only thing, in fact, the only requirement for OA membership, which is part of our credo, if you will, is a desire to stop eating compulsively in whatever manifestation that is for you. So for me, I realized that as long as I recognize that I cannot beat food, it defeats me every time. I had to find something else outside of me that would help me with my food problem. And some people call it God, some people call it higher power. When I first came in, I had a troubled relationship with God, not a very good one. So I turned my will and my life and my food and everything over to the care of Overeaters Anonymous, the fellowship, because I would be sitting in rooms. This is before Zoom, obviously. And I would think to myself, I'm in a room full of compulsive overeaters or other people, other food addictions in various stages of recovery. Surely they are a power greater than me. And I truly believe that anybody who is attending an OA meeting, whether on Zoom or in person, is in recovery. Whether you binged or vomited before the meeting, whatever you do after the meeting, those of you who are off, whose videos are turned off, even if you're eating right now, there is a certain degree of recovery in here, in you, because you're here. And I really believe that. But what I had to do was I had to release my own self-will. I cannot, listen, I've heard people say it, I believe it. I ran the universe. I did a really crappy job of it. But I have such a degree of control or such a bent toward control. I tried to control my siblings. I tried to run the world. I tried to control my siblings. I tried to control everything. When I talked about living with ambiguity, somebody asked that question. Thank you for that. Being here and not knowing everything. Well, of course, we never know everything. When I had questions about, you know, what is abstinence? What's a sponsor? Am I abstinent? Am I not? All the questions. That's the ambiguity that I mean. Maybe ambiguity is the wrong word. The lack of understanding, the lack of clarity of what I'm hearing. I mean, I'm a smart kid. I went to graduate school. I did all, I mean, I'm no dummy, as my father used to say, but sometimes, a lot of times, there are things I just don't understand and I don't get or I'm not clear about. That's the kind of ambiguity that I'm referring to. Sometimes I want to know and I don't always know. I told you this. All right. What is abstinence? That was a big question. They're talking about this abstinence thing. What the heck is that? And then they say, abstinence is refraining from compulsive overeating. Okay, that doesn't tell me very much. And over the years, abstinence has taken a different definition. And now they talk about a food plan. A food plan, one of the tools, or plan of eating. They didn't have that when I first came in. So there's just so much to know. Abstinence from compulsive overeating or whatever your food behavior is different for everybody. You get 10 compulsive overeaters in a room and you'll get 14 definitions of abstinence. It's just what it is. It's different for everybody. In fact, one of the cool things about OA is nobody is going to tell you what you must eat, what you must do, how you have to work the program, and you have to work the program, but they won't tell you how. So there's ambiguity there too. How do I know what to do? And that's where listening to other people come to meetings. That's what helped me learn how to work the program, whatever the heck that meant, which is basically using the steps, which we've already read today and you'll learn more about as you continue in the fellowship, and get a sponsor. My goodness, what the heck is a sponsor? A sponsor in the 12-step programs is somebody who has what you want. If you hear somebody talking and they're talking about, you go, wow, I identify with that person. I can connect with that person. Maybe that's a person who can explain things to me or help me with things or walk me through the steps or clear out some of the cobwebs in my brain. That's what a sponsor is and does. One thing that I realized I didn't tell you. So I came in 86. How many times am I going to say that? I don't know. I had been abstaining from compulsive overeating for 12 and a half years. Then my youngest brother was murdered by his wife and the guy she was having an affair with. For a little while, I was able to not fall into the food, but then I fell back into the food because the pain was so great. 10 years of relapse. Relapse is returning to former food behaviors, to make it short. As I said before, I never stopped coming to meetings. I would sit in the rooms, and I had a lot of friends by then because I've been here a long time, and I would just cry. Couldn't stop eating. I would just cry and suffer. In 2008, February 22nd, my higher power, who I call God, I guess said, okay, Karen, you've suffered enough. You're going to be abstinent again. So in February, this past February, I celebrated 15 years of current abstinence. Not perfect. What do I mean by abstinence? For me, when I first came in, as I said, I could not stop eating. There's no such thing as a mealtime. So I heard people saying, you know, my abstinence is I eat 3 meals a day, nothing in between, no sugar, no white flour, no this, no that, no this. No. I couldn't do that. I couldn't set those parameters. If I could do that, I wouldn't need OA. So instead, I worked out with help from others and a sponsor. For me, it was 3 meals a day, nothing in between, anything I want. So I had a breakfast, big breakfast. I had a lunch, big lunch. I had a dinner, big dinner. But each meal had a beginning and an end that didn't last 3 hours. Also, I had candy bars with my lunch, part of my plan. After about a year and 2 months of abstinence, I got a message in my head that said, start asking for the willingness to give up sugar. So I started asking for the willingness to give up sugar. And about, I don't know, 3-4 days later, I realized at the end of the day, oh my goodness, I didn't have a candy bar with my lunch. I've had no sugar. Who knew? So for that period of time until my relapse, I did not eat sugar. For me, recreational sugar, you know, the candy cakes, all that stuff. The other thing I did was I got into giving service right away. I have had pretty much every service position in a meeting. I've served on my intergroup, which is the OA world is divided up into regions, which are areas in the country, in the world, then intergroups, which is a collection of meetings. And anyway, I've served at region. I'm in region 2. I've served at the World Service Business Conference, which is an annual conference of representatives from all over the world to help with policies and procedures and how the fellowship works. I did World Service for 4 years, been on the Intergroup Board, I've been on the Region Board. So for me, and I don't tell you that to tell you, aren't I hip, slick, and cool? That's not why I'm telling you. I'm telling you because for the first time in my life, I felt I belonged somewhere. I was an outsider all my life. When I got into the fellowship and started giving service, I had a group of people that I was connected to. And if I wasn't there, they missed me. And when I walked into the room, they smile and be happy to see me. Just like I am when I go into a meeting and see people, my mood lifts automatically. That filled up the empty hole inside of me that I used to, fill with food or try to fill with food. I just lost my train of thought. Oh, I hate when that happens. Oh, so as I gave service, as I started working the steps, learning about what are these 12-step things, what are the tradition things, what do all these words mean? As I started learning about these, my meals started getting smaller. I never thought about them. I never focused on them. I just didn't eat as much. And I think that's because the hunger, the hole in my gut was being filled with other things, like the love of people in these rooms, the connection to people, a connection with my higher power that I now call God, and I have for a while. It was the most astonishing thing. In terms of weight, I will tell you that I don't know just because I know a lot of people come to OA to lose weight. And of course, now I've been more concerned about weight because I'm not at the perfect weight. And I think I should be after all these years. Whatever, not in my control. My top weight before my relapse, I don't know what it was because when the scale said 199 pounds, I did not step on it again because I didn't want to see 200. In my relapse, the last weight I remember seeing was 215 pounds. I am not 215 pounds today. Thank you, God. And I have light. You can't see it. There we go. I have life in my eyes. Light, life. I guess with my glasses on, all you see is my computer screen so much. And you can probably see all your cells in the computer screen. You'll hear people say this is a threefold disease and a threefold recovery. What that means is we have a physical, emotional, and spiritual disease. Physical meaning we have we don't react to certain foods or most foods or whatever the way normal people do. When I eat a candy bar, I want to eat 5 candy bars. When my wife wants to eat a candy bar, she eats half a candy bar and puts it back in the refrigerator. Doesn't make sense to me. She'll get a pint of or a little bit of frozen yogurt and take 3 or 4 days to eat it. I do it in one sitting when I eat that stuff. So that's the physical part. The emotional part is, for me, I react to things. I'm very sensitive and I react to things very differently than many people that I know. And the spiritual part is I don't think I knew it, but I had a hunger for a spiritual connection with some power outside myself. Some people call it, the doorknob, the tree, nature, the sun, birds, my cat, whatever. All I know is there's got to be some higher power running the universe, and it ain't me. Because when I try to do it, bad things happen. I am so grateful to be a member of this fellowship. I believe I would be close to dead by now. I'm 1 year younger than my mother was when she died. I believe from complications of this disease. It's not my place to say anybody else is a compulsive overeater, but, she was very young when she died. I was in a major car accident in December. I broke my back, spent 3 weeks in the hospital. I am not recovered yet from that. I have to have surgery on my hand for all kinds of stuff. And I've been getting down and discouraged and bummed. And I'm riding this roller coaster. Good things happen, bad things happen. Good things happen, bad things happen. I just want to be on an even keel and be a person again. course, I am a person. I'm a person in recovery. I have hope. I hope that I never stop coming to meetings. This fellowship is remarkable. It's kept me alive and vibrant and happy and joyous and free. And I really, really hope that I said something that is of use to any of you, because without this fellowship, I shudder to think what my life would be. Thank you all for being here. I thank Mara for asking me to speak. She wasn't able to be here this morning. And I wish you all a lovely, splendid, and delightful day. And please keep coming back. Thank you.